Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Dangerous Rhetoric. This is episode 117. We are joined today by Elizabeth Galusho. She is running for the New York City Council in District 5, which is like the Upper East Side, on like the East Side of the Upper East Side, right?
Right. Third Avenue to the East River and Roosevelt Island. From 59 to 96.
Right. And Roosevelt Island.
Of New York City, to be clear here.
Right. Yes.
You got to say that too.
Sorry, I'm all over the place today. Thank you, Elizabeth, for making time to join us. We're very interested to talk to you about New York City because Daniel and I have recently fled the city, basically, because we can't afford to live there. And I'm sure a lot of people are in a similar position, and also, you know, the economic impact, the lockdowns and crime, the border crisis, and how we have so many. I heard recently that the FDNY is now shutting down like 7 migrant centers because they are flammable death traps.
Fire hazards. Yeah.
So we have a lot to go over.
Yeah,
a lot. There's so many interesting things happening in New York.
Post lockdown, New York City is.
May you live in interesting times.
Different. We definitely are living in interesting times. Yeah.
Understatement. Yeah. Anyway,
my co-host, Mr. Daniel De La Fay, is over here in New Jersey now. We are no longer in the same location.
Yeah, I'm back in my hood. I'm in Elizabeth, so back home. Okay. Yeah, took a while to settle in, but we're back at it. We took a little hiatus from this, so it's cool
to be
back.
It was a very busy summer for me out here on the island. I was working, you know,
moving and work and a lot of other stuff. But anyway, we did a live stream the other night, which was fun because it's been a while, and we had our friend Peter Feliciano on, and Peter speaks very highly of you, and he is who recommended you to us. And he said, you know, you guys got to talk to Elizabeth. So he name dropped you on that live stream. And later on, he told us to get you on and talk to you. So here we are. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you. That's nice. Very nice of Peter. Thank you, guys.
He's awesome. He's so funny.
We're big fans.
Oh, Peter.
Peter, you know, I met him during lockdowns, and then he was another person that left the city. It's been hard to watch people leave. You know, I've had a number of friends move to Texas and Florida and all over the states. But
same,
I have to say, it's like a little cut every time somebody leaves, and I'm like, no, I'm staying. But you know, I always feel like, oof, I do wish some days. I do wish I could.
So well, I guess I
give you mad props for staying and also running for the city council.
Well, I was about to say that. I was about to say, well, is this one of your motivations for running for city council? Is you wanted to stay and you wanted to fight. You were like, all right, I'm not leaving. I'm going to hunker down here and put my roots deeper and fight these people who impose these draconian policies upon the city and have resulted in the current city we are seeing today that is facing a serious economic downturn, increased crime, homelessness, a mental illness on the street, food prices are skyrocketing, people are leaving. Why did you decide to stay and fight and not just leave?
You just said it. I was like, if I'm going to stay, the only way I can look at myself in the mirror is if I do something. And instead of trying to beg these people for our rights, let's try to take their jobs. Let's try to say, okay, then we're going to figure out this system. It's a very, you know, occult, hidden system, how you get your name on the ballot, how you get voted for office if you're not part of the club. And, you know, a group of us got together and we were like, okay, let's do this. So, you know, I'm running on the Republican line. I also did collect petitions and tried to be on a third party independent line called the Medical Freedom Party. And they challenged my Republican petitions. Luckily, we were able to overturn that challenge and remain on the line. They also challenged my MFP petitions and got me thrown off that line. So, and when I say they, it's another thing. This is how this works. You don't know who exactly is paying the lawyer. You know, you see an attorney's name on the paperwork that goes to the Board of Elections. But absolutely, I was like, I'm staying and I'm fighting. And by the way, I don't know if this is true, so somebody fact check me. But I remember hearing that Kathy Hochul said something to the effect of like, if you don't agree with me or you don't like it, you can leave. And to me, I was just like, oh my God, like I was born in New York State. I've been in New York City 20 years. Like, no way do you say that. Mm-hmm. I like that made me want to stay here even more.
Yeah.
No. You don't tell me that if I don't agree with you, I can get the hell out of the state. Like, this is literally my state. I was born in upstate New York. I went to college in New York. I've been in New York City 20 years.
Yeah. And it's sad to see how much it really has changed. The spirit is still there. You know, when I go into Manhattan now, I still feel the vibrance. I think it will recover. But man, there's still a lot of places up for lease. There's still a lot of turnover that has not happened yet business-wise. Yeah. And although people will always come back to New York and will flock there and travel there and live there, the impact was serious. Brent and I witnessed it ourselves. We lived there. We left for a bit and we went to Florida and then we came back. And it didn't improve very much when we came back. Actually, it kind of looked stagnant.
We came back and they were throwing the migrants out of the Watson Hotel.
Yes.
Right? That was like,
well, no, that was a few months after we came back. But by the time we had come back, this whole migration issue was then beginning to hit the city after it had already, you know, had its throat slit by the lockdown policies and the mandates. So yeah. It's on its knees now.
Just to go to that quote, it was basically Hochul said, you know, talking about or MAGA Republicans or populist Republicans, she said, just jump on a bus and head down to Florida where you belong. Get out of town. Wow. That's the exact.
Wow.
It's just, I mean, where do we start with what about diversity, equity, and inclusion? What about
that kind of diversity?
Yeah, no. Not that kind.
Not ideological diversity.
It's crazy because they accuse the Republicans and Trump of being the divisive side. But it's like when I hear rhetoric like that is divide. Like, how are we supposed to have some kind of unity in the country when you're demonizing half the country and saying all these people who voted for that guy, they could all just get the hell out and leave, go over there. It's like, you're going to further not only the ideological division in the country, but you're going to further a geopolitical division as more people keep swapping around like that. That's kind of dangerous. That's entering civil war territory type of thing, you know?
You know, a lot of the stuff that she says, maybe 95% of what she says, I assume somebody else has written and told her to say. So I'm just assuming there are puppeteers, you know, she's just a mouthpiece, right? I mean, these aren't her original genius thoughts. She's reading stuff that looks like it's, you know, marketing literature from Pfizer. She's saying things that clearly are bizarre. And you just have to wonder, like, who's really in charge here?
Yeah.
It's divisive on purpose. And that's why I actually wonder, is she bright enough to be thinking and saying these things? Or is she being told what to say to literally fuel the fire?
It's probably a mixture of both is what I would assume. You know, I'm sure there's a part of her that, toes the party line because these are the positions she agrees with. And then I'm sure there's, you know, there's other people rubbing elbows with her, whispering in her ear, et cetera, from higher on the totem pole in Washington, et cetera. So,
most of what I hear her say just doesn't feel like it's an authentic thing that
it's probably not.
Thoughts and ideas, you know?
That's how I feel about most politicians, honestly. And it's why,
scripted and rehearsed, and they've got their, you know, their lines that they've been practicing and so on. But I just want to, something that you said about, you know, New York, when you come and you still feel like there's still some vibrancy here. Mm-hmm. I'm just reminded of, I was talking to this small business owner in the neighborhood and talking with this woman and a guy who's worked for her for 20 years. They're like best friends. And we start talking about politics and they start fighting because she's a little bit more right-leaning. He's a little bit more left-leaning. So they're getting into it. And she says, we've been fighting about politics for 20 years. Anyway, we're just complaining about New York, right? We're all doing the same thing. There's this problem and that problem. And at one point I go, so why do you guys stay? And they both, I swear to God, without a hint, I love it here. It's so funny that people are like, we can bitch and complain about New York and all its problems. And I mean, there is still a piece of me that I know it sounds so cheesy, but I still do love New York and I'm not going to give up. I also feel like this craziness that's happened, if we don't, and no offense to you guys and others who've left, but those of us who've stayed here, I feel like part of the reason is because we think, you know, what they're doing here, you know, vax passes and shutting down small business. I mean, running small businesses out of business while, like, you know, the big box stores and Amazon mm-hmm. got wealthy. It's going to happen everywhere. So we might as well just stay here,
yeah.
if you like it, right? And, like, make our stand here, because it'll come everywhere, you know?
Well, me, in my defense, I'm from New Jersey. So, you know, I lived in New York for a while, but it's not like I, like,
there
and then left. Yeah. It's like I went there, left, went there again, and then came back here home. But the way you feel about New York is similar to how I feel about New Jersey as a state as a whole. You know, like, only we're allowed to talk shit about New Jersey
exactly.
and hate it. But then when you turn around and ask us, like, well, why do you stay there? You know, we will defend it and say, oh, Jersey's fucking awesome. And we'll list all the things, you know, we love about it. So I definitely get that sentiment. As for, you know, the lockdowns and all of that, I'm very discouraged with the political system, in the sense where I don't know if we're going to be able to stop them from doing this again, I guess. And so many people have already left the area that for you, that's going to be an uphill battle, I feel. Like, what do you think of that? And what is your strategy? Like, how are you going to convince more people who are still there and who are obviously, I guess, okay with those policies? How are you going to convince them? And then how are you going to find the other ones like you who didn't leave but stayed and want to fight back, but I guess perhaps don't know how or where to go?
Yeah. So let me, I mean, this district is almost 70% registered D.
Mm-hmm.
20% independent, which I actually was registered independent my whole life until 2022. I switched my registration to Republican because I wanted to vote in the primary for the governor race last year.
Yeah.
So then the remaining, like, 11% are Republican. So, you know, besides, like, your strategy, like, the math literally only works if I get pretty much all the Republican votes, mm-hmm. 80 to 90% of the independent votes, and maybe even 30% of the Democrats. So the only way, and I've had interesting conversations with people on the street, you know, how many of these are there? But, like, a lot of people will actually say, well, I'm registered Democrat because I'm a teacher, I'm a real estate agent, I'm a this, I'm a that. And they know that your registration is public information. And it's scary to me that people in New York are literally afraid to be registered Republican.
It's like the Communist Party in Russia.
Or, and their other reason, and this is, I think, a very legitimate reason, if you really do follow politics and you're into primaries, they want to vote in the Democratic primary. So I don't, obviously, you know, do what thou wilt. You could do whatever you want, but it's just, I'm thinking about this, what you might call, like, consultants who talk to me about these things, call them soft Democrats. That means they're moderate. They might vote for a Republican. So I am trying to highlight to people, I was registered independent my whole life. I have a pretty, you know, respectable background. I have a Cornell engineering degree. I have an MBA from MIT. I worked in technology for 25 years. I'm not an ideologue. I'm a business-oriented technology person, and I want to fix things, and I want transparency into the budget. So I'm trying to focus on issues that I think are pretty cross-cutting, like $106 billion. Like, where is that money going? Like, why can't we build a pretty simple mobile and web interface so that every New Yorker yes. could be like, let me just see how much money went to that homeless shelter. Like, wait, why is that one, like, empty and this one's full and they make more, you know, they get more money? These kinds of things, right?
Yeah, it's like they make the process as, like, incomprehensible or obscure as possible. And you would think, I think that idea, too, is something that should be implemented across the board.
There's
everywhere.
Probably also a lot of, like, bloat happening with, like, you know,
there, but it's like she said,
getting government contracts. And
all the more reason to be transparent. There should be an easy way, a register to look up and be like, all right, how much money is going to this and this and this and that from our tax dollars? Like, that should be an easy thing to access, but it's not. And if that information is available, we're not told where to find it.
Well, what's crazy is how much they're spending on housing, you know, illegal immigrants right now in the city.
Yes. Yeah, so it's bizarre.
It's interesting that you call them illegal immigrants, because even the New York Post refers to them as migrants. So this is how they play these games with us so that
they do the word games. They love the word games.
We can't even have the same conversation. And obviously the word you choose to use says a lot about what you think about them. You're dehumanizing them if you call them illegal immigrants, and you're very compassionate if you call them migrants. And
so,
you
know, true.
I have a close friend here who's been here 5 years, came on an airplane. He came through a port of entry. He's seeking asylum, and he was in, you know, war-torn countries in South Africa, not South Africa, but in Namibia and Botswana. He was in refugee camps. He has a pretty clear-cut case for asylum. When I hear people refer to all these people who've come through the southern border over the last 2 years as migrants or asylum seekers, I'm like, are they coming from war-torn countries where they're political asylum seekers? I don't think so. I mean, you know, call me uncompassionate, I don't think that that would be the right term.
Also, I've heard the term economic refugees used
The big elephant in the room, too, is that a lot of them are coming from countries where the CIA has been tinkering with the cartels for like the last 50 years.
Well, that's like the larger picture type of thing.
Well, it's
this.
Like you want to know why there's like people trying to flee these areas and why there's war happening. Well, it's like, well,
I wanted to get back to, I guess, what we were talking about earlier.
Back to New York.
How does Elizabeth convince more people to try to use the political system to deal with this and to vote, you know, for her, a candidate who's trying to address these issues, you know, and how are you going to get bipartisan support and all of that? One of the things that I was thinking, you know, because you mentioned small businesses earlier, you know, are you reaching out to small businesses in your district and trying to appeal to them as much as possible? Because I think they would be pivotal in that fight. They could help promote the campaign. They could put things in their businesses, et cetera. Our first two guests on this show ever, when we started this in 2021, one was Mike Ryan of Anarchy Tattoo Studios in the Bronx. Mm. And the other was Danny Presti of Max Public House.
Of course,
Staten Island. Right. And we brought them on because of that angle. We wanted to really cover what the small business owner was going through and just how few of them were standing up against the mandates and the policies.
Yeah.
Like Danny and Mike.
She's like on the street, Daniel. See, she's like on the street talking to everybody.
On the street, yes. But that's what you need. So
it's a great point. I am talking to small business owners. Okay. But the challenge is, a lot of times, as you can imagine, on the Upper East Side, they work here, but they don't live here. That said, they like, this is a delicate dance, right? When you say to a small business owner, and there might be clients around, and I say, you know, I'm running as a Republican, and I want to make sure that our small businesses aren't locked down again. And they sort of go, you know, so based on like the reaction I get, I also say, you know, and that you're not responsible for checking people's like medical status or medical information. And then, you know, a lot of the restaurant owners and, you know, nail salons, hairdressers, like all these places that were shut down, you know, I think that they realize like, oh yeah, right. Why did I have to friggin' check people's medical papers? Yep. Why was I asked to do that? Yep. You know, and of course there are a few, and they would be very quiet about this, who never did that. And they, and by the way, they never actually got fined. So that was a game to see who would fall for that stuff, right? Yeah. Like those were like not even unconstitutional.
Oh,
like
Max Public House got fined out of existence.
Because they were public, right? They were public about
it. Oh, he was public as hell. They declared it
really an autonomous mayor's office.
Do you remember that? They declared it an autonomous zone.
Yeah,
it
was
poking fun at
the mayor.
You know,
I think it was actually like the sheriff's Portland. Because the NYPD wanted hands off. They wouldn't touch it.
Yeah.
And so I think it was Blasio had to send like his personal, like the sheriff, like the state sheriffs or whatever to go.
They also try to set Danny up too and claim that he like attacked the cops when they arrested him and all that stuff. None of which was true.
A lot of fun and games.
But it's like, and part of that too, I think, was, you know, that was the head on the spike for the other businesses. They were trying to make an example.
Do you want this to happen to you?
Yep.
Like, shut up and fall in line.
Yep.
Right. But again, there are small business who quietly mm-hmm. didn't follow orders right. and never actually had any ramifications.
Right. Well, there was no way they could enforce it against all those people, right?
Yeah.
Right.
That's why they all should have just unified from the beginning and said, fuck this shit.
I know. But I mean, that fear was pretty strong. I mean, I've had people say, you know, I've been here X number of years. I've got people who've been working for me for decades. Like, you know, people are afraid for their livelihoods and their employees' livelihoods. Yes. So I can't fault people for, you know, everybody, they did a great job of pumping us with fear and despair, right? Fear of death, fear of illness, fear of financial, you know, mayhem.
Fear of just other people. Like, you know, exile. You're on the subway and somebody like coughs or sneezes, all of a sudden you're like, ooh, you get like but a also, tinge of anxiety.
Exile from your peer groups, ostracization from your family and stuff, yeah. People who fell in line with the mandates and the shots and all of that. That was another risk too, is, you know, that was a huge punishment back in the day. If you got exiled from your community, that was like death.
It was the ultimate punishment.
So they used that very much against people like us to push us to the side and make us lepers to everyone else. Yeah.
Well, one other thing that I didn't mention about how do you get people, you know, moderates to come over, mm-hmm. you know, focus on some of these, like, I know it's a cheesy line, but like the common sense issues like crime and homelessness. I mean, can you say with a straight face that our neighborhood is better than it was 2 years ago? I mean, we have people sleeping on the subways, sleeping on the streets in our neighborhood, which, you know, is a pretty rich, nice, like, neighborhood. It's still much better than a lot of other parts of the boroughs. And it's like, we've never seen it. I've never seen it. I'm here 15 years in this neighborhood, 5 on the west side. I've never seen New York like this. People sleeping in the subways, you know, just passed out. Like, I mean, it's just so sad. And where is all this money going? So, you know, crime, homelessness, I feel like these things are connected to what happened in 2020.
Absolutely.
Not everybody sees it that way, right? Not everybody will admit, or they're struggling with the cognitive dissonance that, like, oh, wait, we locked down businesses. We pumped everybody with fear and despair. We made them socially isolate. We shut down small businesses. So, yeah, we have more drug abuse.
We also printed a ton of money and inflation and all of that. Yeah.
And it funneled all to a certain small set of companies. But, like, so anyway, I think most of us can agree, if we just look around our streets, they're filthy. Like, this, the corner sub, you know, the trash cans at the corners are always like, the can is like left open. I think I think it's actually people who are looking for cans.
They
get right?
through the trash. Yep.
They open, you know, the outer metal part, right? And then the plastic can is hanging outside of it that they've rummaged through. And now people are just throwing their trash like into an empty metal container, or it's spewing all over at the big intersections, like 86, you know, 79th, big intersections. There's all four corners, all four cans are absolutely overflowing, just trash and litter everywhere. So how can you say, I mean, things are either even good, let alone better than they were a couple of years ago. So I'm just trying to appeal to people's, like, hey, I'm not a politician. I'm not about passing more legislation. I'm not going to focus. I passed all these bills. No, let's just clean up the streets. Let's get people into homeless shelters if they need help. Let's, you know, support the NYPD to crack down on crime. Like, I think pretty common sense things.
I have a question. Homelessness obviously is an issue, but what about the issue of mental illness? You know, it's one thing to, you know, dealing with a normal homeless person on the street is one thing. Dealing with someone who is ready to snap is a whole other thing. Like, what do you think of, say, asylums? I've heard people call to reopen such institutions to deal with that issue.
I mean, these, like, there's a gross old one over on Randall's Island. I mean, this looks like a place like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. You know,
I can't even imagine what's going on in those places. We need a huge overhaul in the way we think about dealing with people who have mental illness, instead of just pumping them with more drugs, you know, like, and feeding them garbage. I mean, you know, I just am somebody who's My father was a doctor of chiropractic. My mother was a nurse. And I grew up in a house where, you know, we ate good food. We exercised a ton. We got outside in the sunlight. Like, you know, we weren't mental illness, I think, needs a complete rethink of the way that we actually handle it. And it's not just more pharmaceutical drugs. And here's this like crappy food and stay in this terrible room and don't get sunlight and all the rest. But can I just tell you a story about the homeless thing? Because I met a woman on the street when I was, you know, getting signatures, petitioning to get on the ballot. And she said her son is sleeping in his car. And I said, would you let me, I want to try to, you know, research, like, where does he go? How does he get help? And I'll be, you know, so she gave me her number and I did call around and I found out where he should go. There's a big, huge men's shelter in Times Square. And then I found out that these shelters are full of very violent people. They sometimes have knives, fights break out. People have stuff stolen from them.
Yep.
They have a couple of microwaves and they get like microwaved food. I mean, it's just, so I called her back and I said, look, he's a vet. He's a vet. He lost some hearing in Afghanistan too. So I called, there's supposed to be all these services for veterans, you know? And the woman tells me, yes, but he has to go to a homeless shelter first to prove that he's homeless. And once he's there within 90 days, we will, you know, we'll assign a case manager and we'll get him into permanent housing within 90 days. And then when I found out about the situation in this homeless shelter, I thought, you know, this guy is smart to sleep in his car, because if I was a young guy like that and I had a car, I'd probably sleep in the car rather than go to that crazy shelter where your stuff will get stolen. You might get in a fight with somebody. And the other thing, and I actually went to a panel discussion about homelessness, and it included on the panel was a woman who's been homeless for decades. And she bounces around between different places. And she was saying that the biggest problem of all is that homeless people are chronically tired. They never, never, ever get like a good night's sleep. And so, you know, this guy probably knows, like, I can sleep better in my car than going into one of these homeless shelters. She actually had, I thought, a very interesting idea of like how we sometimes give, you know, people like the, you know, we call them food stamps, right? Like you give people...
Sorry. Radar, down.
Wow, Radar.
You had a great idea, which is I would like to get sleep credits. So I get like some little kind of voucher that lets me go into a shelter where I can get a private space, even if it's literally just a bed, so I can sleep.
That is an interesting concept. I've never heard of that.
I mean, she just said, like, and then you have these people who have all these mental illnesses because they're so chronically sleep deprived. I mean, we're talking, you know, for months and years, potentially, like, they're just, and by the way, I see, you know, people who look like they're who come through the southern border, and like a family, you know, a woman, a man, a child or two on the subway, and they're all like passed out asleep. You know, they're, I just think, God, these people must be so exhausted. They never get like a, they're probably sleeping like seated somewhere, like on the side of a curb or in one of these shelters or something.
Well, they have 217 migrant housing centers all across New York, with seven of them being considered like major or like large facilities, where they have like, you know, a couple of hundred to a couple of thousand people in there together. When we were at the Watson Hotel, was like right next to where I was living. And at first they had a bunch of just like single men basically staying there.
Yeah.
There was a lot of like marijuana smoking happening outside. Like they would have like regular little like parties.
A lot of trash.
There was also like, they had mopeds that were unregistered that were all like chained up to the scaffolding there, which is not really a great way to, you know, chain up bikes and mopeds. Like, you're not supposed to chain anything to the scaffolding because it's like a, you know, a hazard, you know,
right,
that pull things down. But eventually they had to, you know, kind of get those guys out, and because they had families that were coming.
Yeah, so the mayor basically ordered the single men to vacate the Watson and to they opened up the new shelter in Brooklyn at the cruise terminal over there. And so they were going to relocate the single men there if they wanted to go there, and they brought buses in to take them out and leave. Well, what happened was a few of them had gone there early and then came back and weren't happy with the accommodations. They felt, you know, it was too open, not enough privacy, whatever. So they complained.
It was communal living, basically, versus having a hotel room.
So a few of them, I guess, complained about that, and then some left-wing activists riled up a few dozen of these migrants riled up by left-wing activists ended up camping out in front of the hotel and refused to get on the buses and to leave.
Wow.
And it turned into like this new story.
They were there for like, I don't know, 10 days, two weeks.
It was only like 3 nights.
Was it really only 3 nights?
Yeah, it was only like 3 nights. And then when the cold hit frigid levels after like the third, I guess it was the third or fourth night, then the police at nighttime came in and they broke the encampment down and kicked them all out. But they were making them move because the mayor wanted to put families in the hotel instead of the single men. So, yeah.
So yeah. I met three guys on the subway just about a week ago, not maybe a week and a half. I can't remember. I'm riding the subway, and these three very, very dark-skinned guys get on, and two sit across from me, and one sits right next to me. And, you know, they're smiley, and I look at the guy, and I'm like, hi, where are you from? And he, like, just a tiny bit of English, you know, he tells me Senegal. And then the guy across from me speaks pretty good English. So, like, the three of us were sort of talking a little bit, and then the third guy, I guess, really didn't understand any English, so he was pretty quiet the whole time. So I said, how's it going? Like, how'd you get here? You know, and they were like, yeah, we flew to Tijuana. I said, you came through Mexico? Yeah. So how do you get to Mexico? You fly? And he goes, yeah, we fly from Senegal to Mexico City, come through Tijuana, come across the Arizona border, get our COVID shots, he says. I'm like, oh. And then we get on a bus and come to New York. And I was like, oh, and are you working yet? And the guy next to me with not great English says, do you have work? So I think he's asking me if I work. And I'm like, oh, no, actually, I'm not working right now either. But I realized later he's asking, do you have work? Like, can you hire us? Right? Yeah. I said, no, I'm not working right now. And I said, do you have bikes? And he knew exactly what I was asking. He goes, no, not yet. We have only gotten here 15 days ago. So we're looking for work. And I said, so are there many from Senegal? And he goes, not yet.
Wow.
I start laughing, and he kind of starts laughing because we, you know, he gets it, the guy across whose English was decent. And I go like this. I was like, so you're going to call home?
Come on in.
Yeah.
Come on in.
The water's warm.
Well, I feel bad for the immigrants, honestly, because I feel like they are being sold a lie.
They're being used. Yeah.
You know, they're being used. They're being told they're going to come here, the streets paved with gold, that there's work everywhere and opportunity everywhere. And look, America has a lot of opportunities. There is a lot of work here, obviously. But I think they're kind of, I think a lot are coming with an impression of something that isn't reality. So,
where it's unsustainable, right?
Yeah. It's very unsustainable. There's no way we can just continue to house
brand new clothes on. It's funny because the guy's shirt had some English on it, which was sort of like a play on words, like kind of a joke. And I was like, oh, do you know what that means?
No idea. Right.
It was just funny because I was thinking, like, you know, it's lost on them. But anyway, they all have obviously brand new clothes and they're being housed and fed. And I think, yeah, I would be calling my friends at home too. Like, come, it's great.
When I noticed when I would take my dog for a walk, I'd walk by the Watson in the morning. Every morning they would have pallets dropped off of food, clothing, shoes.
Yep.
Everything you could imagine, just provide it. And I don't know if that was public money or NGO money or where, but every morning they would have pallets dropped off.
Wow.
And I used to just look, I got video too of it, but just to see what it was, and I was curious.
Why can't we put our homeless people in hotels and, you know, feed them good, healthy food and clothe them? And why can't we do this? Just, it's very, very interesting, like how, you know, it must be monopoly money because we can decide to spend $12 billion a year on this, but we can't spend, like, you know, I've been, another issue that people have educated me on in the neighborhood is that there are there are 250,000 New York City public service retirees. That's people who have retired from the New York City, you know, teachers ranks, police, fire, sanitation work, right? They're all over all 50 states, right? And they were promised in their contract that they were going to get health insurance that covers what Medicare doesn't, right? So above like the 20% that they have to cover on top of Medicare. And of course, pretty much every doctor will take Medicare, et cetera, et cetera. Now they've been, the city has reneged on that. And they've put them all on this crappy Aetna plan that requires all sorts of, you know, you can't go see a specialist. You have to get all these, you know,
how the red flags and barriers.
That happened to my grandma. Same thing.
This is a nightmare. You have to get all these, you know, see a primary care doctor before you can see a specialist, all these things. But the biggest problem, though, is that Aetna only covers 40 states. It does include, for example, Florida, where a lot of these retirees live. So everybody's very upset. And for some reason, now this is what's interesting in the politics, I wouldn't dare suggest I understand, because I've been in tech my whole life, so I don't know, but I've heard things over the years, of course, about the unions. And anyway, there are a couple of Democrats who have signed on to a bill that was introduced by a Democrat to try to fix this, to, you know, in essence, insure them again with a local law that they will have on top of Medicare, like full coverage through a provider. For some reason, the rep in my district won't sign on for it. And I guess there's a game going on between like the current union and unfortunately their own retirees. And some politicians, I guess, are more in the pocket of like the unions telling them what to sign on to and not. And it's just crazy because they've started a legal battle. They won a legal case, but the city's appealing it. So they're also trying this other route with the local law. And it's okay. What I heard, and again, I could be fact checked on this, but what I heard is that the cost of that is between maybe $300 and $600 million a year. Okay. I mean, not nothing, but that, let's take the average, so $450 million. Now, that is like, we won't spend 45 cents on retirees' healthcare benefits, but we will spend $1,200 on migrants, right? So it's just, I can't figure out like how decisions are being made about the budget. That's where I just come back to like budget transparency, because we'll spend $12 billion a year on housing and feeding and clothing migrants, and we won't spend $450 million to just keep our promise. And by the way, just keep our promise. And the other thing is, if I was a current member of the union, I'd be thinking like, well, wait, are they going to throw us under the bus when we retire? Like, it just, nothing makes sense anymore.
It makes zero sense. You know, you have Americans who are born here, raised here, worked their entire lives, pay taxes their entire lives. But when they need help at the end of their lives, nope, there's some shit left for you.
But we have all this money.
Well, it makes perfect sense to them. It's functioning the way they want it.
Money left and right.
You know how this is the issue for somebody who is retired on a fixed income, like health insurance.
And I know my grandma's going through it right now. She can't get Medicaid. Her house is in foreclosure. She worked for Union County, New Jersey for decades. And people like her, nope, you get nothing in the end. We have to strip you of everything for you to get help. That's the only way you get help. But all these migrants, yep, just throw all this money at them, even though they just got here and they're not from here. It's insane. Yeah. It makes no sense.
So this is, I mean, you know, is this going to get me 30% of the Democrats to vote for me in my neighborhood? Probably not. But that is a group that have, some of them have said to me they are going to vote for me as a protest vote. They voted for her. They would vote Democrat normally. They are really upset about this.
Who's the incumbent?
Do I have to name her?
Oh, I mean, you don't have to. I thought it was a dude. I was like looking at, when I was looking up district.
No, it's a woman named Julie Menon. She's been in the seat 2 years. I guess there was a pretty vicious primary for that, because, you know, when there's an empty seat, like, all the Democrats flood in because the primary is so important, you know.
Right. The primary is the election.
The primary is the election. And the city council has an 8-year term limit. Normally it's a 4-year term, What we're doing this year is kind of a special election for 2 years because of the redistricting after the 2020 census.
Okay.
So in 2 years, in 2025, there will be another city council race with the mayor, and that will then go back to a 4-year term. So
that
this woman's been in the seat 2 years. She has to run again, and then in 2 more, she has to run again for her second, 4-year term, and then she'll term limit out.
I was going to mention the 2020 census, which to me is a fascinating subject because it basically became useless as it was being done. Because while the 2020 census was happening, was the beginning of the mass migration of people swapping states, leaving New York and going to Texas or Florida or wherever, or people leaving Texas and Florida and Republican states and going to California or New York. Yeah. This huge swap around began around that period that the census was starting.
Not to mention,
so the census isn't going to be accurate, is what I'm saying. Is things changed?
120,000, I think it's 120,000 illegal immigrants that came through New York, and there's about 60,000 of them still there, dependent on the city.
That too. So it's just like,
with more coming, more keep coming, guys.
Geographically, the census is
the guys are calling their friends in Senegal.
Yeah,
there's nobody that's willing to shut the border. You know, but Biden's border patrol people were cutting razor wire that Texas had put down to hurdle people across to let them in.
Then they had the buoy barrier that they made him move. They made Abbott move out of the Rio Grande. They had, you know, he put this barrier in there.
That's what I heard from somebody who kind of was very left-leaning, very upset that I said, you know, they're cutting even our attempts to put up barbed wire. Oh, that was like a human, you know, violation.
You can't just leave them there. I'm like,
in the river. And I was like, oh, is that what it was? I don't know. That's what it was. But anyway, one other thing I wanted to say to you, Dan, tell me what you think of this. Like, the RFK Jr. thing is creating a little bit of a splinter among Democrats. I think they're having a lot of cognitive dissonance, trying to figure out, like, wait, the trope is the anti-vax Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what do I do now?
You're asking the right person. So Kennedy opened his New Jersey campaign headquarters right here in Elizabeth, near my house. And a few weeks ago, I went to the opening event, the rally, and I took a picture with Kennedy. I didn't really get a chance to talk with him, but I saw his speech. And then a couple of weeks after that, my friend and I went to Philadelphia, and we saw him relaunch his campaign as an independent. Which I think is historic. It felt historic. Not only is it Kennedy running again, which has not happened since his father was assassinated, but the Kennedy name still holds weight in America, a lot of weight, for sure. And although we've had independent candidates before and some of them who, you know, got a lot of support, like Ross Perot and people like that, this does feel different to me because of the history behind someone like Kennedy. He's doing pretty well in the alternative media market, although the mainstream media doesn't give him much time. He's done all the major podcasts, you know, like Jordan Peterson and Rogan and all these people. So I think he does have a serious chance, and he has a year. He has a year to really make something happen and to see the kind of dent he can put in. My personal opinion of him, I'm still on the fence, but I kind of like him a little more now for the simple fact, and I said this during the live stream on Saturday, the simple fact that Kennedy came here to Elizabeth. He came here. He came here. He spoke with us directly. Trump didn't come here. Biden didn't come here, you know. Vivek didn't come here. Haley didn't. None of these people came here. Only Kennedy did. So I view that as like a sign of respect. And it definitely, I'm going to consider that in my decision later of who I vote for. So,
It does feel very historic, like the speech in Philadelphia and the breaking with the Democratic Party.
Yes.
To Kennedy.
He said it was hard for him to do that. The Kennedy dynasty goes back over 100 years in that party. So it was a big deal.
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes that comes up when I talk to people on the street. I do think that that's creating a little bit of an option for Democrats to start to just ask more questions. I think that's the main
thing. And feel like it's okay to do
that. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to have a different view. You could still be like, I think what's, you know, it just feels like people are so deeply, deeply identified with their political, what their voter registration card says.
Entrenched. I mean,
it's funny when you think of it, like your voter registration card says a word and it's like this deep sense of identity. I'm a Democrat. I'm a Republican. I was just talking to a woman, maybe late 40s, early 50s, and she said, you know, I grew up in a household with one Democrat and one Republican. That wasn't that long ago when people had families where the two parents were different parties. And now it's just like unthinkable that you would partner with someone who's not your political tribe. Anyway, I hope this is giving people who really deeply identify as Democrats and progressives and open-minded people, you know, these are like what I would have called myself 3 years ago, and all my friends still call themselves. But now there's like a space for them to be like, oh, who is Peter McCullough? Oh, who is Robert Malone? You know, like, it's okay if we might watch a podcast that like Joe Rogan does, you know, just these basic things to give them a little space to question things.
I'm very curious what his campaign is going to do to the general election. I'm going to be following it closely because I think it is going to have an impact. One of my friends kind of, I was talking to him about this a few weeks ago, and he argued that, you know, Kennedy may even be in a sort of like kingmaker position where he can kind of decide which party he can end up screwing over more than the other. But in his speech, he did bring this up. You know, people asked him like, oh, you're going to take votes for the Democrats, or they told him you're going to take votes from Republicans, and he said he is trying to spoil it for both parties. That's what he said. He said he wants to spoil it for Biden and for Trump.
So of course, that's how he wins, right?
Yeah.
He takes some of both and then he gets enough to win.
A
friend was telling me that supposedly some articles she had read were suggesting, oh, he's stealing votes from Trump, and I was like, why are we surprised? I mean, there are lots of people who are not happy with Trump and boo when he says certain things about, you know, still being the father of the vaccine and saved millions of lives and all this stuff. And we're like, dude, why are you still saying that? You don't even still say it. By the way, people talk to me all the time on the street, start like ranting and raving at me about Donald Trump. And I'm like, hi, my name's Elizabeth Galusha.
I think part of
about Donald Trump for like, is he the problem? I mean, really, are we going to blame the homeless people sleeping on the streets and the trash all over the corners on Donald Trump? I mean, you can dislike the guy, but you cannot blame like our local city problems on him.
I think part of why Trump, I think, still touts Operation Warp Speed in the way he does as a success is because of that. He needs to view it as a success because he's Donald Trump and he has to succeed. So he can't look back and be like, oh, this thing I did was actually a massive failure. I should not have supported that as president.
He also probably doesn't have anybody telling him that to his face. Let's be honest. Yeah, I mean, to get that viewpoint, he would have to go outside of his normal circle of, you know, like yes men and sycophants. Like,
I mean, I guess he's, I just find him so entertaining when I watch some of the stuff.
Oh, he's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
He's so funny. Oh, my God.
Obviously, he is Natural not told what to say and not to say, because I can't believe he just said that about whatever. Chris Christie, like, you know, during the debate, he's making fun of Chris Christie because he's like, well, I didn't give him a job. I mean, I understand. He's mad at me. I didn't give him a job. Like, wow, he just called it out.
Yep.
Anyway, that's the only thing he will fall in his sword about. Like, I shouldn't have had that guy. That guy was the problem. I made a mistake with that guy. But he'll never admit a mistake of his own. He'll just sort of say, like, I would, you know, anyway.
He does tend to shift blame.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And he was a huge fibber. I mean, he was famous for, you know, like, shifting the truth around a little bit. Like, who cares? Whatever.
Well,
I mean,
it's politics, typical, too.
Typical politics.
Yeah.
But Joe Biden is just a disaster.
Well, Joe Biden is just very obviously compromised. You know, it's like I've never seen a more compromised.
So I can't hope Jim Jordan becomes speaker. I really hope Jim Jordan.
I don't know. He didn't get the vote today, apparently.
Well, you know, it's going to take time, but I don't think there's anybody else that can come along.
But from what I was reading, a lot of the House Republicans, well, the few who are pissed about how the McCarthy thing went down. They were apparently, they wanted Scalise to be the guy. So they, I think it just feels like they're going to try to gum it up and stall it.
He doesn't have the votes.
He doesn't have the votes. No, he needs to get more unity among
Jordan's the only one that has a plurality, you know, of like he won the internal vote. I think there's something like 55 Republicans that were not in favor of Jordan.
I think 20 voted against him today.
Well, okay, that's better. So he's down. He's gone from 55 to 20. That's doable. Man. He's got some ground to cover, but that would be major because
it would really be big. Yeah. Well,
he's
the
one that's looking into all the impeachment stuff. You know, he's head of the judiciary, so he's well aware of what's going on.
He also questioned the lockdowns and the vaccines. He had the committee. He had a hearing before Congress for vax injured victims. He had them come in and give their testimony to Congress. He was the only guy doing that in Congress who organized an event like that to actually have these victims tell their stories.
In the House, I think Senator Ron White from, I can't remember, I think Wisconsin. Was it Ron White?
Yeah.
He had a bunch of people in too.
Okay.
In the Senate.
Not White. I know who you're talking about.
Ron Johnson, maybe?
Johnson, yeah.
Okay. So many names. I can't remember them all.
Yeah.
Speaking of the House, I just like a week and a half ago, I saw, I went to an event where Newt Gingrich was speaking, like banging the drum for war, And it was like a little creepy, people in the room, like bloodthirsty, like, yeah, let's get
him.
We're going to do this and we're going to do that. And I'm like, dude, you barely got down those stairs. Like, you're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
My brother was in Iraq. My younger brother was in Afghanistan. You are not going to do anything. You're going to, you know, you and people like you are going to send young guys like my brothers to go do your dirty work for you. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
He was sort of bad mouthing without naming names, kind of like the six or eight in the House that are rebel rousers and not like, you know, basically.
Oh, yeah.
The Freedom Caucus.
The establishment really is mad.
Like, that if it was him, he would kind of like go after them in their primaries next time around. It was like, wow, this is how we do it. We just like, you know, we grab people.
Just like the Democrats, you know, they get the neocons get really mad when someone steps out of line and decides to engage in good old fashioned, you know, republic democracy here.
Yeah.
And they don't like it when you actually, you know, force people to keep to their agreements, like McCarthy. McCarthy broke his agreements with the group. Like,
yeah, I don't blame Gates for holding him to the fire like that.
No, I think I love it. I love the drama. I love the
drama
because there is no speaker right now.
Literally political theater.
Yeah,
right. I think it stopped. I think it prevented a lot of, you know, emergent like money going out the door just to go, you know, right back to Israel. Like, it's like, can we just stop?
Well, that's what we're seeing right now in the GOP is there's definitely a fraction.
Yeah, everybody loves to just throw money at Israel.
Well, there's the non-interventionalist ones now who are like, maybe we should be focusing here at home, you know, America first, that whole movement. And then there's the ones who are more the old school Republicans, and they're gonna get behind Israel as their ally and say we need to go to war and defend them and blah 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 blah.
So one thing they agree with Joe Biden on.
Yeah, well, and now you see like Schumer aligning with over the Israel issues. He's now bedfellows with a lot of these Republicans. Like, so it's interesting.
It's the same thing with Ukraine, right?
Yeah.
You can imagine how this plays out on the streets of New York, right? Probably like the most politically like heated area for a Middle East crisis in the U.S. is New York City, right? Mm. And I think it's just there. I mean, this guy was really, verbally aggressive with me on the street last week because he was demanding that I pick a side. And I was sort of...
What is with that?
Well, so it was just very interesting because he came after, I think he assumed I was Democrat. And he, you know, because there's this weird thing, it's orthogonal, right? We have these really hawkish Republicans, and then we have these kind of like hard left, you know, pro-Palestinian. So people are like, they can't figure out now, wait, who am I with? Who am I against? Like, he probably thought I was like this, like pacifist, hard lefty. And he's like, you know, I worked for Bill Clinton. I'm thinking he must have talked. I'm guessing he meant at the Clinton Global Initiative. I'm not sure if he was, you know, he didn't look old enough to have been in the White House. But anyway, he's like, so He's like, in my face, this is, I know this is playing the men versus women thing, but it felt like the most extreme example of mansplaining. Like, you must pick a side. If you're running for public office, you have to have an opinion about these things. And I was just standing there, like, thinking in my head, no, I don't. And I literally said to him, you know, you're very welcome to believe that, but I don't have to, too. Like, you're welcome to believe that I have to pick a side because I'm running for public office, but that's not my belief. Like, I don't have to have an opinion about everything. I'm worried about, like, the trash on our streets, homeless people in the subways. Like, but he was, he was adamant. And it's really, like, triggered a lot of people in New York.
Oh, yeah. That issue is fracturing.
Super divisive.
Both parties are being fractured by it right now. It's very interesting to see.
Right. So these things always make me wonder, like, you know, you don't need an MBA to be wondering, like, who benefits? Like, where's the profit motive? Who?
Yeah. Also, it was just as the war in Ukraine, you know, funding and, you know, interest in Congress to throw money there is just going away.
Such, like, you know, warmongers, like, we need to, you know, anyway, it's all been confusing. And I think people are, like, struggling to make sense of it all. So they're just locking down even harder into their, like, I am X.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so
people are becoming more and more entrenched, yes, in their ideological views, in their party loyalty, all of that stuff.
Because you have to be willing to have, like, almost an ego death.
Mm-hmm.
To be like, oh, maybe I'm more than just a Republican, or I'm more than just a Democrat. Maybe I could peel that layer off me. Maybe I don't have to be an angry feminist and hate all men. Maybe I don't have to be a, like, you know what I mean? Like, take off whatever layer and be like, what's left? Oh, I could just like, you know,
be an individual. God forbid.
That's hard.
Fix.
It's a lot of hard work. You have to actually, you know yourself and figure out what you like, what you don't like, what your values are, what you stand for, how much you will stand before you decide to act. It's a lot of work.
You know,
I'd say about probably half the population just wants to be sort of like, you know, given a cookie cutter existence, told what to do, what to think, where to go, and, you know, have things more or less work. It's very, you know, not that many people want to, like, risk alienation, their livelihood, in order to present a contrary.
But it makes life so much more interesting.
Oh, I agree. I mean, it's like I'm very contrarian.
I would encourage everybody to do it. Like, go for it. Like, try to figure out, like, why you're traumatized whenever X happens, because you deeply identify as a Jew. Okay, I get it. Like, everybody has good intentions and real reasons, but, like, figure them out. Figure out why, when somebody says something about this topic, you know, your blood rate, you know, your heart rate goes through the roof and you can't see straight.
Two stories I saw just in the last week. One 6-year-old boy was murdered, and his 30-some-year-old mother was attempted murder by a 71-year-old man in Illinois, being the police basically are saying it's because they were Palestinian-American. Mm-hmm.
Yep,
And then another story happened at Columbia University on the Upper West Side. A 19-year-old man attacked a, I think, 23-year-old student at Columbia, who was putting up like posters talking about the Israeli casualties. So this guy's going up putting up posters about the casualties on Israel's side. This 19-year-old man gets into a fight. They get into it, hits him with a broomstick, ends up getting arrested and charged with hate crime stuff. It's like,
I think
we're going to see more of that.
I think I've seen those posters, actually. They're all over the Upper East and the Upper West Side, and it basically looks like a missing. You know, I stopped and looked because I thought it was like a local person, like father, missing father. But then it's a picture, like, it's got a screenshot. It's taken off social media. Like, this is an Israeli father who's gone missing, or an Israeli family that's gone missing. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to say, you know, I think, Elizabeth, you do have the right approach. You know, you're running for local politics and you really want to focus on what are the immediate problems now amongst us that we are dealing with in our lives at home. So I think the point you make here, like, you don't have to take a position on every single geopolitical issue of what's happening around the world, is the best approach. It's the Jordan Peterson approach. It's we need to clean our room first and deal with our immediate situation, our immediate relationships, our immediate community before trying to solve these larger issues going on in the world. It's like, how are we going to be in a position to help Israel, Palestine, or any of that stuff if we can't even deal with our shit here in our own backyard? It's-
yeah. I just one more thought on that idea, which is that I don't, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, with less social media, we wouldn't have even known about all the atrocities that happen on the planet on a given day. And by the way, atrocities like that happen all the time and we don't hear about it. But the thing that I just keep feeling is like, I don't think my physical body and my mental brain was meant to handle this much every day, like knowing everything that happens and feeling the grief of every tragedy. Like, it just is not humanly possible to like have a clear-headed mind when you're constantly getting. So I always am just trying to kind of be like, wait, who's trying to hijack me right now? Mm-hmm. Take me out of my blissful state, because like I have my own personal challenges to deal with, and I have my own streets and my own neighborhood, and that's about all I can handle, you know? And it's not that I'm not compassionate and that I am ignorant. It's just like, again, yeah.
I would argue that by dealing with those things first is how we put ourselves in a position where we can then be of help to say other communities outside of our communities. Yeah. But you know, if you don't put the, you know, if you don't, like a plane's crashing, you don't put the mask on yourself first, then you're not going to be of any help to the child next year or whoever else might need you. We're not going to be of much help to other people's issues if we can't even take care of ourselves in the immediate problems.
This is a huge topic, so we can't get into a lot. But like, when people ask me, well, if you were an independent, like, why did you decide to run as a Republican? Well, if I think about what became starkly clear over the last couple of years was the default philosophy of the two sides, individualism, you know, I will be honorable and I will take care of my own crap and I will worry about myself. It's not selfishness. We will be a collective better when I take care of myself. You're responsible for you. I'm responsible for me. I'm not your savior. You're not a victim. Then we can have a collective society that works. If we start from collectivism, you must sacrifice yourself. Yeah. You must do things that you don't want to do for me. That doesn't get us to individual sovereignty. Mm-hmm. I feel personally like the philosophy of the right-leaning side of personal sovereignty to a collective society that works feels more logical to me than a collective, like, for the greater good. You know, if a few people have to die of myocarditis and heart, you know, well, so be it. But like, when do we ever get to personal sovereignty when we start with like collective sacrifice for the group?
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's where I've ended up. And I grew up in a very, I would say, libertarian household, and, you know, have been unemployed a couple of times in my life, and don't, you know, deny anybody else. You go get help if you want it, but I'm living off my savings while I do this. I don't want government support. I've always just been taught, like, you know, you don't expect handouts. Like, you know, God helps those who help themselves. Like, clean up your own stuff, take care of yourself. You know, you can be your brother's keeper when you are a sovereign person who takes responsibility for yourself first, right?
Yes, I think that's a good place to end on too.
Yeah, Elizabeth, can find you at elizabeth4nyc.com.
Yes, the number and four, Elizabeth.
Number four, yep.
NYC.
And then there are links to Instagram and Twitter there.
Yeah.
Also, when is the election? What's the date?
Yes, it's November 7th.
It's coming up.
And there is early voting, October 28th to the 5th. And I've been told that we'll be lucky if 5 to 10% of the people come out to vote this year, because there's nothing on the ballot except city council and a few vacancies for judicial judge positions. So I put a picture of the ballot on my Instagram. It's like a really funny, you know, there's like a whole bunch of people on the A line, which is the Democrat, and then there's me. One Republican on the whole ballot. So
yeah.
Which one of these is not like the others?
Honestly, I think it is admirable to stand on your own in that way. And yeah, I have a yeah. lot of respect for you for doing it. Yeah, I see it.
So funny. Which one of these
funny. Is not like
it? You know, I love it. I always, you know, when I watch a
the underdog
and I don't know the two teams, I always root for the underdog. And I just, you know, I just feel good having done my little tiny part. And I take some crap from people on the street and I'm like, you know, give it to me. It's fine. Give it to
well,
me.
Well, look, you have skin in the game. You can say
yeah, yeah,
at least
yeah.
you tried. You can lay your head down at night and your conscience is clear. That's how Brent and I feel about all the stuff that's happened over the last few years. We yeah. struggled. It was hard on us. There was a lot of sacrifices we made. But at the end of the day, my conscience is clear.
Yeah.
I know that I spoke out. I called out the shit, the corruption, the lockdowns, all
no,
that stuff.
I know
stuff.
A lot of people who so, just still want to complain. And I'm like, yeah. dude, you could come out on
do something
and hand out flyers.
Do something.
Do something, know. Right?
Totally. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Elizabeth, for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Elizabeth Galusho, everyone.
Yeah,
everybody needs to vote for Elizabeth if yeah, you live on the you, Upper East you. Side, District 5. I already told one person who I know that lives there, and I know she is very excited to check you out, and she's
awesome.
Going to tell other people. So
awesome.
Cool. Thank you, guys.
All right, guys. Don't forget, like, comment, share, subscribe. It's good to be back. We're happy to be doing this. Thank you for all the support. We appreciate it, and we'll join you again for another episode soon. Take care, guys.
Love you. Stay safe. Stay sane. Bye-bye.